thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Holy smokes, it's not John Williams. Hey, everybody. Matt Bubala here with you on a, what is today? Today's Thursday? It's a weird week, isn't it? Good afternoon, everybody. Matt Bubala here with you for John Williams on Thursday afternoon at 1:10 p.m. Eric Rung in the newsroom telling us all the sad news about all of our investments. That if we got all excited yesterday, Eric, and then today we're not.
Well, who knows? So, I mean, tomorrow we could gain 1,000 points on the Dow.
That's true. Boy, wouldn't this be interesting if that's just the way things go now? 1,000 up, 1,000 down, then you never get upset, you never get excited.
That's why they always say, you know, you got to play the long game.
Yes, you do have to play the long game. The long game is really easy to play when things are going well.
It makes it easier to play, that's for sure.
Well, when things are going really bad, it's tough to think, all right, we just got to wait another 40 years, it'll all come back. We'll be fine. But what goes, as John always plays on the show, what goes up must come down, right? So things will come back. Matt Bubala here with you, 312-981-7200. As we were talking to John Hansen during Crosstalk, it does seem to be a crazy time of year. You're all making resolutions. You're deciding, should I do this? Should I change this? We just talked about the story about a couple that got married after knowing each other for 1 hour, which seems really insane. But a lot of people, maybe this time of year, thinking about, do I need a job change? Is it time to move on? Or sometimes you get pushed to the brink where you can't handle it anymore and you just walk out on a job. Eric, have you ever walked out on a job?
I have never walked out on a job. That I've heard plenty of stories of people doing that and some funny ones in newsrooms as well.
I imagine you have. And it's amazing when somebody gets pushed to the brink of that point where it's just they can't take it anymore, throw the computer out the window, walk out the door.
I'm mad as hell and I can't take it anymore.
Our friend Alexia Alejalde Ruiz is a writer for the Chicago Tribune, and she's got a great piece online right now. It'll be in your paper this Sunday about people that just got up and went out in a blaze of glory. Hey, Alexia, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thanks so much for jumping on the phone with us. Now, it's funny, Alexia, because you write in the story, and you kind of mentioned a couple times, it's really not recommended. This really isn't a good idea. You really shouldn't do this. But then none of the people you talk about that did it have any regrets over it. So it's
hard, I know.
Hard to balance that out because they seem pretty happy with it.
I know. I mean, well, any expert, you know, on how to quit will tell you to maintain the relationships, don't burn bridges, you know, realize that this will come back and haunt you. However, as you mentioned, the people who do drop the mic and walk out the door and tell their boss to shove it, the people that I talk to at least never seem to regret it.
Yeah, I wonder if there's, and 312-981-7200, if anybody's got their own story of what they did or what they saw happen in a workplace where somebody just stormed out, we'd love to hear it. But the people that you talked to, I mean, one of them was a web designer who was very upset. It was a startup, so it's a small company, and everybody's doing everything, right? And we all know those companies where, even though this is your title, you've got to help do everything there. But her boss introduced her to board meeting as a secretary, and that was infuriating to her because it's one thing not to make much money. It's one thing to be at a startup where you got to work all these crazy hours, but then to not even get the recognition. So she went back the next day and deleted the entire website that she had worked on and just left a note and said, you know, and walked out the door. And that's not only did she just walk up and quit, but she took all the work she had done basically with her. That seemed like a really, but she was happy with that in the end.
Yeah, I mean, she said she was just out of college. She'd only been there for about a month, and she acknowledges that this was not the most mature way to handle the situation. But at the time, she was young. She was maybe being a little dramatic, and she said that when she walked out that door, she just felt like she was, you know, the most powerful person in the world because she, you know, like you said, she just put a post-it note on her computer saying, I quit, after deleting her hard drive. She didn't take down the website, but she kind of deleted, you know, everything that she had done so they couldn't track the work and they'd have to kind of do it over.
Yeah.
And so she got some great satisfaction about it. And, you know, she said, I wouldn't do that today. You know, I would voice my concern and say I was upset that you, you know, called me a secretary when I'm in fact a webmaster. However, she said that if she could do it again, she would have just, you know, signed it from your webmaster, not your secretary. Yeah. That was the only tweak she would have made.
So, and that's maybe an easier one to do because right out of college, she doesn't have a mortgage and a bunch of kids or things like that, where as we get older and have more, I guess, obligations in life, it gets tougher. But you also have a story about somebody who was in a corporate world and walked out and then the next day was thinking, how am I going to feed my kids? How am I going to handle the mortgage next month?
Yeah, that was an example of someone who had just reached the end of her rope, right? She'd been unhappy for a bit, kind of dreaded going to work, had been really burned out and overworked. And when her boss told her one day, called her in one morning and said, hey, I'm going to need you to work weekends or something. She just refused, and I couldn't put it in the story because there was a lot of F-bombs, but, you know, they just exchanged F-bombs, and she just walked out. She said she wept the whole way home because she, you know, was responsible for half of the, more than half the salary of her household. She had two kids. And, yeah, so she was very concerned about what this meant just for making ends meet. And what happened, though, is that she was able to then, you know, chill out, you know, knew that she really loved gardening and slowly but surely kind of built a business around writing books about gardening, giving wellness advice. And now she has her own business, and she's so happy. She doesn't make as much as she did in her corporate salary, but her health is much better. She had all these stress-related allergies, which have since subsided. And so she also doesn't regret it, even though in that moment it was very stressful.
That's such a tough thing to weigh, I think, because basically what we look at is, am I going to make as much money? And looking at, will I feel better? Will my allergies subside? Will my stress abate? Is very tough, I think, for us on the outside to look at and say, yes, this is worth doing. I think it gets very tough as we get older and maybe not just walk out of a job, but even to think about changing jobs, changing careers, when there's so much stress of life that surrounds us in our everyday, you know, credit and everything that we owe in so many different places as Americans today.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's why people stay even when they don't want to and when they'd be happier doing something else, just because it's a fear of the unknown. I mean, right now, the reason we wrote, or the reason I kind of pegged the story to, is the fact that, you know, it's a very tight labor market and the quits rate is really high. It's the highest it's been in about 20 years, which means that people are quitting at higher rates, which means that they feel comfortable that there's another job waiting for them. That's not always the case, but even when it is the case, you know, it's kind of like the devil you know versus that which you don't, or something, whatever that saying is. Like, you know what you hate about your job, but you don't know what's on the other side, if you're going to hate it just as much for other reasons, or even if it's going to be give you the stability that you feel like you need.
Yeah, you mentioned in the story, so the quit rate is 2.4% for the 3 months. That was back this summer. It was 2.4% for the 3 months over the summer, which basically meant that 2.4% of the American workforce was quitting their job over that time, and that was the highest it had been since 2001?
Yeah, that's right.
It's really interesting, and I wonder, you know, the workforce seems so different now than it did in 2001, right? Because there's so many people working multiple jobs and so many people part-timing and contracting work. And I wonder how that relates to how we keep jobs these days, because so many Americans aren't just working the one job with benefits and getting by on that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, people might also be moving more often because, you know, just generationally that's the case. And also the types of jobs that we have might be worse. Jobs are not paying quite as well, and so you're juggling multiple jobs and you're moving from here to there. So yeah, that's true. That could also reflect just a change in how we're working.
I think even when you're not going to quit a job like that, but you know you need to move on or want to move on, you talk in the story about how difficult it is for people to decide to move on from jobs and what companies are doing. One company, particularly here in Chicago, who is doing to encourage their employees, look, if you are looking for other work, there are ways to go about that. I want Alexia to elucidate on that a little bit after we take a quick break. 312-981-7200 is the number and the text line. Alexia Alejalde Ruiz from your Chicago Tribune chatting with us about quitting jobs in glorious fashion or just patiently moving on to the next one. Next, here on 720 WGN. If you wanted to talk about a job that you have quit in a blaze of glory, or if you're trying to figure out how to slowly get your way out of a job and into a new one, Alexia Alejalde Ruiz from your Chicago Tribune is on the phone with us. And Alexia, one company here in Chicago, you said in your piece, actually encourages people to let them know months in advance if they're even thinking about looking, and they'll give them time to go out and do interviews and things like that, which seems incredibly weirdly progressive.
Right. So this is Jelly Vision, which is a very progressive company in a number of ways. They're a software company here in Chicago, and they have something called a graceful leaving policy, and they tell their employees about it, you know, the day that they start. And basically it says, you know, if you feel like moving on from here, let us know well ahead of time, months ahead of time, even before you've started looking, before you have another offer, and we will help you. You know, we won't hold it against you. You'll still get raises as scheduled. You'll still get promotions if you want them. them. We'll still treat you just the same, but we will look out for other opportunities within the firm if that's a way to keep you. We'll talk to you about what you're unhappy about, maybe if it's about wages, which, you know, rarely is, really only about that. We can see if we can do anything to keep you. But at the same time, like, you know, they're viewing this as a long-term relationship that they want to keep the relationship good on both sides. So what this does is, obviously, is it gives them a chance to retain somebody because they get a heads up, and it also gives them a chance to plan for their departure.
And do they feel like that really does work there? Do people, is it such a policy that people like never want to leave there because they're so good to everybody? Or, you know,
yeah.
I think I'd still feel weird about saying, listen, I am looking to leave, but I, you know, I'm not sure about this. And I don't know. I think you'd, as much as they want to make that, I think as the employee, you'd still feel like, God, it's weird that I'm telling them that I'm looking.
I would think it's totally weird. It seems actually kind of insane. But they say they have a very kind of specific culture that they have baked in to their workplace that makes it so that people trust that they can do it. It helps if you see other people do it, you know, so I think that that's a major thing, is that they see some of their colleagues take gracefully. They see that it works as described, although they did say that as they get bigger, it's harder to get people to believe that it is true. So plenty of people still give their 2 weeks notice as usual. You know, not everybody takes this graceful leave policy, but I did talk to one young woman, that young, you know, 30-something-year-old woman who was really nervous about it, you know, but she told her boss, you know, shortly after she had started, you know, this just isn't really right for me. And she says it was a big sigh of relief because she was able to then pursue internally other options that she thought might be more interesting as well as outside of it. And she didn't feel like she was like secretly, you know, going on interviews and hiding it from her boss. And you know, I talked to her boss too, who said it's just like, it's a nicer way to go about it than having your employees lie to you about having doctor's appointments.
I imagine, yeah, for the employer, it's got to be better, although it's got to feel weird. I know as employers, you feel weird when somebody wants to leave, because then the employer feels like, well, what did we do wrong? How are we making you unhappy? So it's really a weird situation for both sides when somebody just decides it's time to move on.
Yeah, for sure. And employers say that, you know, the most frustrating thing is when they weren't given a chance to rectify the situation. So if the employee was unhappy about something and next thing they know they're just quitting, it's like, but, you know, maybe we could have worked on that. So they do want to list at least like a little bit of option. I mean, then there's also obviously the cases where an employee will express their dissatisfaction and the employer won't do anything about it. And so the employee ends up leaving, but that's the employer's fault for not being proactive.
Yeah. Alexia Alejalde Ruiz, the story will be in our Sunday Tribune, right, Alexia?
That's correct.
But it's online at chicagotribune.com right now. Thanks so much for jumping on the phone today.
Thank you, Matt.
All right, we'll talk again. Alexia Alejalde Ruiz from your Chicago Tribune. We'll get you some News Click results next on 720 WGN. Thank you, Eric. Matt Bubala in for John Williams today here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It's also the text in line. Texter from 414 points out, you cannot get unemployment if you quit. You have to be fired. Well, that's something to take into consideration, isn't it? Of course, I wonder how many people have stories about how they really wanted to quit a job really badly, but really wanted the unemployment because they didn't know the next step. Can you imagine the lengths people have probably gone through to try to get somebody to fire them?
Well, they can still contest it, too.
So how does that work? So if you quit, you could still try to file for unemployment?
No. Not if you quit. But
if you get fired.
If you get fired, your employer can file an appeal and try and make it so that they don't have to pay you the unemployment.
Oh, man.
Yeah, they can claim you were fired for cause.
Well, why else would you be fired? I mean, if it's not for cause...
There were all kinds of reasons.
I mean, I can understand
reasons.
You're laid off because you had to do staff reduction or things like that, but that's not, in my mind, a firing, right? That's a laying off or a workforce reduction or something like that.
It's called being fired.
If you're laid off, you're fired. I mean, either way.
Yeah, you can tap dance around the language all you want. It still comes down to you no longer have a job. And the last time I checked, the word for that is fired.
Well, but doesn't...
I understand what you're saying,
doesn't
and I get it.
Doesn't fired have the tone of, listen, you're out of here, versus laid off is like, hey, we'd really love to keep you. We do like you, Mr. Jennings, but here's the thing. We don't have enough space. We're not meaning blah, blah, blah. We got to let you go.
You're still fired.
Oh, it's still in the eyes of unemployment, though.
I don't want to fire Mr. Jennings, that's for sure. He's not going to make it easy on the employer.
No, I've been fired.
You mean I'm fired? Oh, we've all been fired. We work in radio and stuff, right? I mean, yeah. multiple times, probably.
I've been through a layoff. You know, my position was eliminated. It's called, you're fired. I mean, it's a nicer way of saying it, but why use a nicer word to describe an experience that isn't nice?
Because I do think that there's a difference between you're not cut out for this. Listen, I have been fired from jobs before. Where it's like, no, you don't work here, you must go. That's a terrible, terrible feeling. Now, I don't know if it would be any less worse if they're like, listen, we'd really love to keep you. We like what you do here, but it's just a numbers thing and we can't have you and we'll help you get somewhere else. That's, to me, that's at least different. You can at least walk around with, well, you
it
know.
It feels different, that's for sure.
A little bit, at least. Not in Ken's eyes. I was fired. All right. I get it. 414 says it happened to me. They fought it, and I got a lawyer and won. But that stinks, because then you got to get a lawyer, so then you're losing money on that. So you're fighting for unemployment benefits, which aren't going to be that great to begin with. And then you're going to lose that, too, or lose some of that money to a lawyer. I guess that's why, you know, for a place like Jellyvision, it's great that they have that policy that they want you to give them months' notice, and, hey, we'll help you, and we'll do all these things for you. But I think as an employee, it's very hard, because you worry about, well, if they find out I'm looking, then they're going to, you know, push me out. So you'd rather just sort of be quiet about it. You wouldn't want, it would be weird for you to be walking around the halls here saying, yeah, I'm interviewing down at WLS tomorrow, right? People look at you like, what? Nobody would ever talk about that. Eric, you don't have that interview tomorrow.
What? I'm sorry. Say that again.
Exactly. 312-981-7200 is the number. Nick's called in on 720 WGN. Hey, Nick, how are you?
I'm doing good, guys. How you doing?
We're doing great. What's your job loss story, sir?
Oh, you know, I was going back and forth with the laid off versus the fired. And as a construction worker, we get laid off all the time due to lack of work or in between projects. Sure. You're never truly fired because you're always brought back, you know. Just it comes down to the timing of new job sites going up. So.
And when you're laid off, do you get to collect unemployment then?
You do. And unemployment, they call it due to a lack of work for the time being.
Yeah.
So. You know, they don't consider you being fired. You're just temporarily laid off in between.
And so when they do that, if they didn't like you, then would they just not bring you back when they rehired, or are they obligated to, like with a union thing?
They're not obligated to, but more times than not, they're going to. I mean, it just depends on the rapport that you have.
Yeah.
So, you know, I haven't really seen it to be too much of a problem so far and in the years that I've been in the trades.
How many years have you been in the trades, Nick?
Going to be going out 4 years this coming year. So,
and I would think at least here in Chicago, it seems like it's been 4 pretty good years for construction. There always seems to be a lot of building going on, right?
Yeah, you know, it's slowly getting better. So no complaints. And if not, we could always travel too. So
and go find work elsewhere.
That's right.
And do you find that you pretty much keep working all winter long, no matter the weather?
I do because I'm indoors.
Okay.
Well, the biggest problem we find is with the new buildings. I installed terrazzo flooring, so I'm a mason by trade.
Okay.
We have to wait till the buildings get buttoned up from the outside,
right,
before we can get in there and put the flooring in. But you know, in times that's happened, I've looked for work in the West Coast or the East Coast. You know, just to try to stay busy and off of unemployment.
Yeah.
So, and being part of a union, they help out.
Yeah, no kidding.
And try and place you.
Trades have been good to you so far?
I have no complaints.
Excellent. All right, Nick, thanks so much for checking in.
Have a great day.
You too. 312-981-7200. 209 writes, laid off usually means if they rehire, they call you back in order of seniority before they hire off the street. So there you go. 312-981-7200. Yesterday, John Williams' news click was a high school wrestling match in New Jersey wouldn't go on without cutting one wrestler's dreadlocks. Elif, can you jump on the phone here for a second and explain to me, because I've read this headline several times and I've never dug into it. Was this so this was a ruling by the referee at the wrestling match?
Yeah.
And was it because the hair was long and the other wrestler would be able to grab onto it, or that wasn't fair in
That's
some ways?
That's the idea, yeah.
And so they said, no, you have to cut it off or you can't wrestle. And the wrestler said, fine, go ahead and
either
do it.
Either forfeit the match or cut your hair.
I imagine he'd been wrestling all season long with these dreadlocks. Did they say this is the first time this had come up?
Yeah, exactly. He just wrestled last week with the same hair. And I forgot where my thought was going with that, but...
And he had been fine. They'd let him do it.
They let him do it, but they... over the weekend, they only spent 90 seconds talking about, deliberating on cutting his hair.
And then boom.
In the middle of the match.
Cut it or you forfeit.
Yeah.
Had the match already started, or was it right before it started?
That detail, I don't remember, but he did get to wrestle, and he won.
Because he cut the dreadlocks off. That's why he got
right,
to wrestle.
Right, that's why he got to continue.
And is there a lawsuit over that, or are there complaints? Or
no, not yet. Apparently, the wrestler hasn't complained, except maybe
like the State Wrestling Association or something?
Well, if I can jump in here, I can help you out here.
Sure.
So what happened was that there was an investigation into the referee's conduct. That is ongoing. The teenager's family has put out a statement through an attorney saying we're going to let that kind of work itself through the system, and that at least for right now, that's as far as they're taking it. However, they did think that the referee's decision to make him either cut his hair or forfeit was atrocious. It's also in the rule book too, though, that wrestlers have to keep their hair, I believe it's above the collar or shirt collar,
okay.
or have to keep it off the shoulders. It is in the rule books as well.
And I didn't see the picture. Were the dreadlocks like hanging down the back? Were they pretty long?
No.
They weren't. How long were they?
They were like just below his ear.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that's very interesting. That changes the entire scope of this to me, because I assumed this was sort of like when we see an NFL player who has a long bit of hair coming out of his helmet down his back.
Yeah.
And I could see where a referee would say either that is going to be grabbed on and that's illegal, or that's, you know, inhibiting the other wrestlers, whatever. But if it was just above his ears and right near his head where anybody else's hair could be, that seems very odd that they would. And I would think you would say there should always be some, I guess, stepping stone of, if the referee at the match thinks this has to be done, there has to be a superior they can call for a ruling on something. It should never just be in the hands of that one person. They should be able to appeal that process up or something. So the question was, a high school wrestling match in New Jersey wouldn't go on without cutting one wrestler's dreadlocks. A, that's fair. He still got to wrestle and win, 21%. B, that's not fair. This should have been thought through better. 79% of you voted with that. And I'd have to see a picture, but I would think I would go with B on that. That should have been thought through better, that you're going to make the young man cut his hair, even if it wasn't. I could see if it was impeding on the wrestling.
But also, in the Iowa State rulebook on hair and facial hair, it says that a decision like this shouldn't be made in the middle of a match in front of people in order not to embarrass the wrestler.
Yeah. Yeah.
It says not to embarrass in that rulebook.
But you said that's the Iowa rulebook. This was in New Jersey.
Right.
New Jersey has no rules on embarrassing. Jersey is pro-embarrassment.
I'm just giving an example.
Now, somebody else texts and says they were long before they got cut.
Okay, hold on.
We're going to have to go back and double check on that.
There's a video.
Maybe you saw him post-cut.
Well, there's a video of him getting them cut, and you just see it, like, down to the neck.
It wasn't down to his shoulders. It wasn't a long thing. And if I understand correctly, he had wrestled before wearing a cap to cover his hair. And that
That's
had not been a problem, but in this instance, this specific referee decided that just wearing a cap wasn't good enough. The dreads had to go.
You know, I've umpired, I've refereed, I've done all these things before. It's the referees can never make it about themselves. It's about the kid, especially in a kid's sport. Jeez, oh, Pete, call somebody else, get a ruling on it, but don't try to take it over.
The referee had also had complaints filed against him in the past, too.
That's not surprising. It doesn't
And from what I gather, and Eric, maybe you can verify this if you got the story in front of you, but he was late
for the match
in question.
Comes
so
walking in. And
that conversation about the dreadlocks could have been had earlier if he had been on time, but he was not. And I believe he's been suspended from acting as a referee indefinitely.
While the investigation's going on, yes, that's correct.
There you go. Real quick, 312-981-7200. Hey, Lisa, this is Matt on 720 WGN. How are you?
Fine, thank you. I was just going to say my son wrestled in high school, and in fact, on in his high school, they had a girls' wrestling team. Okay. Or actually, not the girl. They were starting it. And he actually wrestled against a couple of girls. I mean, and I always told him, you're wrestling against another wrestler. Now, that's beside the point. But the girls always had a cap, and none of the girls had short hair. So, you know, it's like, if you're going to go by that, then are you going to cut every girl's hair that comes on to the mat? I mean, clearly they're not going to do that. There is a precedent set. And also, the night before you go in and you have to do a weigh-in, whenever you do any of these tournaments, they actually look at your nails. They check everything ahead of time because they want to make sure that you're safe to wrestle. And they check the weight. They check different, make sure that you don't have ringworm or any of the other skin conditions. So this is something that could have been cleared clearly 24 hours in advance, where the kid would have had an opportunity to bow out, and the team could have put somebody else in this place to wrestle that spot. And and part of the pressure for the kid is you're wrestling in your weight category. It's not only just a personal score, but you're wrestling personally, but you're also wrestling on the team, and the team gets points for every win that happens.
Right.
So, I mean, there was a lot of pressure on this kid to continue to do so, and I really feel bad for him because that was completely uncalled for, in my opinion.
It seems like a referee just overstepping his jurisdiction, right?
I believe so. I think he also, who knows what his own personal beliefs are, and I think that that may have come into play.
So you think it was you think there was racism here?
I do.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much, Lisa. I appreciate the call. Absolutely. 312-981-7200. And, somebody just sent us a picture of him pre-match, and the dreads are not that long. They do hang over his ears a little bit. They just come out a little bit up top, but they're not hanging down over his eyes. They're certainly not hanging down past his neck. That's where I thought it would come into place, if it's hanging down his back and that impedes the other wrestler's ability to grab onto him. That's crazy. That's crazy that that referee would just make that decision. And they're right. If they go through the weigh-in and they go through all these things pre-match, why would you do that? Diane is on 312-981-7200. Good morning, Diane. I guess good afternoon, Diane.
Good afternoon. Yeah, I pretty much agree with the previous caller, and I really am angry that this child, I think he's 16, like maybe a junior, was forced to make this Sophie's Choice instant decision of getting rid of his dreadlocks, which is part of his heritage and culture, and don't forget wrestling is a team sport and costing his team potentially the points. So I think that was a very not child, not student, not athlete-centric thing to do, period.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Diane. I appreciate it. And one more quick. Julie's got something to say on this. Hey, Julie, you're on 720 WGN.
Hi. I just wanted to say the coach was totally out of line.
You mean the referee?
He mistreated the referee, yep. He mistreated a teenager and humiliated him. I think there should be a lot of sanctions against this referee.
Well, and it sounds like they're doing an investigation, and he won't be refereeing in the meantime. Thank you very much, Julie. I don't know if he embarrassed. I think wrestlers are a very tough lot. I knew a lot of wrestlers. I went to Mount Carmel High School. They had a big wrestling program. Those are pretty tough kids, and I don't think they get embarrassed too easily. I think that kid is probably angry more than anything right now that the referee would have made him do that. His dreads will grow back. He'll be fine, but he shouldn't have been put through that. Certainly last minute before my, cause here's the bigger picture. I think from the wrestler's mind, maybe this was a racist action. Maybe this was just stupidity on the referee. I don't know what it was, but before this kid has to go wrestle, he's being forced to go through this, whether it's changing your headset, changing your uniform, doing something, you're taking that kid out of the moment where he's getting ready to do his thing for something that seems like pretty stupid and pretty overstepping his bounds. So that was our News Click. We're going to take a quick break, tell you what the News Click is today, next on 720 WGN. Balling for John Williams here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200. Is the call-in and text-in line. 847 says, watch the end of that match. The wrestler was affected. Yes, likely angry, but also ducking his head and wanting to get out of there. He's a teenager. 708, people make so much out of so little. The referee should have disqualified him for a violation of the rules. If that embarrassment hurt him, life will crush him. Whew, okay.
Harsh.
773, either enforce the rule or get rid of the rule. 815, I can hardly watch the video of that poor boy. I wish someone had stepped in. Let's move on to the new news click, Elif. Today's news click, it's just up now at WGNradio.com. The crowd at yesterday's Timberwolves versus Bulls game shouted MVP at Derrick Rose. So Derrick Rose, towards the end of the game, is shooting some free throws. And the United Center crowd starts chanting MVP, remembering the glory days when Derrick was a young man here on the Chicago Bulls and he won the MVP. I think he was the league's youngest MVP ever when he won it for the Bulls. So the crowd starts chanting MVP and Derrick smiles, which you don't often see Derrick do. And Derrick had a rough ending with the Bulls. You know, he didn't come back as quickly as fans and the team wanted him to from some injuries, had a ton of injuries, and it was kind of a sad departure. Certainly not a happy one. But now there's a lot of love for Derrick as he comes back and plays here these days. So the two options are, A, love that. The Bulls should retire his number when he's done playing. Or B, that was a nice gesture considering his Bulls career was disappointing. I think I would have to go B. It's really nice that they did that for him, but his career here was disappointing in the end. I know our old buddy David Kaplan has been around talking about should they retire Derrick Rose's jersey when he retires. Eric, can either of you guys think that Derrick Rose has earned he's a Chicago kid, number one draft pick. He gives a lot back to the city. He's done a lot, and he brought the Bulls some glory in the only glory they've had in the post-Jordan era.
But, I would agree with that. Yeah.
But,
I'd go with it.
But one MVP is not enough to retire a jersey, I don't think.
Nope.
It's Matt Pabala in for John Williams here on 720 WGN. Thanks for hanging out with us, everybody. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, high above Wacker Drive here in Chicago on a gloomy Thursday afternoon. But I guess we're not driving in sleet and snow, so we got that going for us, which is nice. Seamus Toomey is the editor-in-chief of Block Club Chicago. He joins us right now to chat about the biggest local stories from 2018. Hey, Seamus, how are you, sir?
Great, Matt. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. Doing good. Thanks very much for jumping on the phone. I know you got dad duty today, so you're trying to manage some things that are maybe different than beating down on reporters who are trying to get stories in.
Exactly. If you hear any loud noises or something like that, I might have to leave for a second.
Okay, just give us a heads up. Sounds good. Well, hopefully nobody breaks anything while we're chatting. So let's talk about the biggest stories you guys covered at blockclubchicago.org this year. Is the number one thing far and away, or is it a close race? Would it be Rahm surprising us all by not running for re-election?
Yeah, I'm going to go with that one. I mean, it was just in terms of things that we didn't really expect. We had some inkling leading up to it that something felt weird leading up to it, but he was still fundraising. You know, he arguably, still has the power of this, the city council behind him. But yeah, when he came out on right after Labor Day on September 5th, the second the door opened and his wife was standing right with him, we knew right away what was going on, that he was about to deliver a bombshell.
And I haven't followed that much since then, but has it ever really come out what the real, do we really believe we know what the real reason is? Was it fear about the Laquan McDonald trial, or just it's getting tougher and tougher and his power maybe wasn't as solidified as it had been?
I would say that the narrative of why he didn't run hasn't changed that much since the minutes and days after his announcement. There was a strong suspicion that that it was going to be a very bruising campaign for him to win a third term. He of course said he was confident he'd win, but I think the reality is that it was not a slam dunk necessarily. Certainly, probably not to make it out at least of the round one cleanly. He had a lot of cleanup to do in this city over the last 8 years, and that takes its toll. Both on his sort of his political muscle as well as on him personally. And part of the reason he said was you know, at some point it's just time. It's the job of a lifetime, but not a lifetime job, was this quote. So, you know, I think it was, you know, I think it's fair to say it was a little bit everything. You know, looks in the mirror and says, you know, I'm ready to move on to my next chapter. My kids are going off to college. You know, we've got some time on my hands. But I think it would be foolish to say that, you know, him looking ahead at his prospects of winning a third term. It was going to be a rough road.
Well, do you think at all that this was politically motivated as well? Not just that it would have been a tough fight, but that if he had lost, then his career would ostensibly be over. Do you think he looks ahead at other offices he might still try to run for?
You know, I don't think you'd ever hear Rahm Emanuel say, you know, that worry about how this is going to impact his legacy. I don't think he's necessarily that sort of guy that's thinking about legacy mid office. But, I don't know where he goes from here, frankly. I mean, I remember when he was first elected mayor, Fran Spielman, you know, had him promise in writing that he was never going to run for president. And, you know, that seems, you know, hard to believe at this point that, you know, that he would aspire to that down the road. So, yeah. So I don't know. You know, I'd never rule him out. He's a heck of a behind the scenes guy as well. So, you know, I think his political days obviously are not behind him, but, higher office, I'm not sure what it is that he could do.
So the next big story has to be, Jason Van Dyke being found guilty, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, with all of just the everything that goes along with it, just, you know, such an incredibly huge story for Chicago for the last couple of years or so from so many different angles. I mean, and it continues to go on with the officers who were on the scene, you know, going to trial now. An officer, Van Dyke, was convicted of second-degree murder. It was really a big day in Chicago. I think there was a lot of you know, concern in some areas that he may not be accountable for his 16 shots. I think there was a sort of a sigh of relief that among a lot of groups that this was justice. It may not have been the first degree murder that he was initially charged with, but it seemed quickly that a lot of the people that were calling for a first degree murder conviction were satisfied with the second degree, as well as the 16 counts of aggravated battery, which actually carry a stiffer prison sentence than the second degree. So, huge story, you know, on many different fronts, but it's still not over yet.
Yeah, yeah, and we'll still wait for sentencing and for the police that are on trial right now, as you said, to finish up their trial. But spinning out of that, I guess if we're going to talk about Rahm maybe not running because of that trial, then what comes next, I guess, is all of the people, everybody else in Chicago, that seems to be running for mayor. I can't remember what the current count is. I know it was up to 21 at one point. I think some have dropped out. How do you see that moving forward in the year ahead? Do you think we're going to get down to 4 or 5 real contenders, or do you think this is going to be a muddy mess all the way till Election Day?
Oh, I think it's going to be a muddy mess all the way through Election Day. I mean, we're not that far out. You know, it's February 26th is round one. Someone's got to get 51% or else the top two go into a runoff. So, you know, it'll be here in no time. I think it's going to be, you know, I think the folks at the top are going to be the ones sort of pounding away at each other. I think the Mendoza-Preckwinkle matchup is going to be fascinating. And, you know, with a lot of power and a lot of financing behind it, I think they could really, you know, they could really bruise each other up over the next couple months. But it's fascinating, you know, that they consider Bill Daley, you know, it seems like he's got a ton of money, but he's not necessarily even being considered in the first tier in a lot of circles.
That's what's so surprising to me is there's the name Daley is on the ballot, but I don't read a lot or we don't seem to be talking about him very much at all.
Right. You know, I mean, we spent a lot of the last 8 years, the Rahm Emanuel years, talking about, you know, the mess that Bill's brother, Rich, left the city in. You know, did a lot lot of good things, but, you know, admittedly, even you know, Bill Daley will admit it, there were things that needed to be cleaned up, financially, for sure. I get the sense a little bit that the Chicago has moved on from the Daley name to some degree, at least when looking for a leader, and at least, you know, looking from, you know, the same generation from Richard N. Daley. So it could just be, you know, Daley fatigue that, you know, Bill's hitting at the wrong time.
Yeah, that's interesting. Is it that, or could it be he's sort of lying in wait, letting these other people battle it out, and then saving his money for a big last splash?
Could be, but you gotta at least get into that into the runoff if you want to really make that last big splash. So, we'll see. You know, with Paul Ballas, Gary Chico up there, they used to be the dynamic duo running the Chicago schools. Yeah. It's interesting to see them against each other. Amara Enya is a fascinating candidate in here as well. I mean, as a political watcher, it's fun to see this many people throwing their hat in the ring, and didn't really expect the opportunity. So they're, everyone's taking their swing.
Yeah, no kidding. They sure are. I guess one of the other big stories you would say this year then on the sports scene would be the Bears suddenly going from worst to first in 1 year, and we're actually thinking about a decent playoff run here.
Hey, how about that? Something we can all agree on, right? I mean, when the Bears are playing well, I feel like the city can really come together in ways that that the Cubs can't do, the Sox can't do,
yeah.
You know, even the Hawks. You know, you can argue the Bulls, but, you know, no one's holding our breath for a strong Bulls run here. But boy, it's fun to watch Khalil Mack just go after the quarterback every play, and, you know, with hopes of getting a sack. You know, it seems like this team couldn't do for the last 10 years. So it's been fun. It's been fun to watch the Bears to have someone to root for on Sunday and not rooting against them, so they get a better draft pick.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. That is a change of pace, isn't it? Seamus, one of the things you guys do so well at Block Club Chicago is report on the neighborhoods at that local street level. And when I worked there as a broadcaster for you guys, I would love to hear all these little stories about all the things going on in the neighborhoods. And back when it was DNA Info. And now that you guys are Block Club Chicago, you're still doing the same thing, covering on a local street level all the stories that we don't necessarily hear from other outlets. And one of the things I love is you guys always report on a great new bar that opened or a restaurant that closed after so many years. Was there a particular story from this year that you can remember about something that came or went that was really exciting for Chicago or sad?
There's a million of them. You know, we always say at Block Club we love doing the opening stories and the closing stories, but it's the closing ones that really strike a nerve, you know, because everyone's got a connection to some of these places, whether they drank there as a, you know, right out of college, or, you know, they wanted to always go there and never did. I'd say one that stands out for us, and it's fresh, you know, the smoke is not settled on Sabatino's, the Italian restaurant on the northwest side. It's in Irving Park. They announced their closing back in August, and it was just a bombshell for that neighborhood. It was just one of those places you could always count on. It was a place you had your banquets and, you know, your family dinners, and the white tablecloth, the violins, you know, the dessert cart would come to the table. But yet they announced in August that they were closing, and they actually had their last meals on December 23rd, so just a couple days ago. And we always say it's the end of an era, but it really was over there at 4441 West Irving Park. Had been in the family for generations, and the brothers that owned it, Angelo and Enzo Pagni, they said, we're getting up there in age. Our next generation doesn't really want to do this anymore, and they were getting a little tired of coming to the restaurant every single day. And so they sold it, and they sold it to retire. Nothing sinister. The place was doing great. They just didn't have a buyer, and they wanted to go somewhere warm, presumably.
Angelo and Enzo are out of the business, huh? All right. Well,
I know. Did you get there before it closed? I didn't, and I regret it.
I didn't. I wish I would have. But that's the great thing about Block Club Chicago for anybody. And let's talk a little bit about the site itself. BlockClubChicago.org is a paid news service. So you subscribe and then you can get the stories. I go on the website and I can still get stories. How does it work exactly, Seamus?
Sure. You know, we're trying to do, a little mix of everything from around the city. You know, we want to cover the highs and lows of the city. We let people read up to 5 stories a month. They can access it for free without needing a subscription. And our breaking news stories are always free as well. So, you know, if you're wondering what the heck's going on down the street with all the ambulance and firefighters, you know, that's all going to be free. But then it's just about $6 a month or $59 a year. You get unlimited access to all the stuff. And we're excited to be expanding our neighborhood coverage in 2019, and you know, just get back to that level of neighborhood coverage that that you and I enjoyed so much at DNA Info, Matt.
Yeah, and when you guys started out, so you opened up shop at Block Club Chicago back, I think it was in June, right?
Yeah, June 13th was the first day we went live.
So you've been about half a year now, and you've already expanded quite a bit your neighborhood reach, because I remember it was going to start out as 5 or 6. Now when I look at the scroll down, it's a lot of neighborhoods being covered.
Yeah, you know, we wanted to make sure that we started at a level that we could sustain and get an idea of, if people would come back and read us, and it's been great. Great reception from Chicago. We really appreciate everyone who's logged on, everyone who's bought a subscription, everyone who's spread the word. We people given subscriptions for Christmas the last couple of weeks, and that was exciting to see people buying their kids subscriptions and sending their friends subscriptions. So it was great. It's allowed us to take a look at the books and say, hey, I think we could add a reporter or two as well. And we've been getting some help from the foundation world. We're a nonprofit, so you know, it's we feel like we can contribute to the mosaic of Chicago with our reporters peeking in, store windows, trying to figure out where the next coffee shop is opening, why that bar is closing, all that kind of stuff that we found people like to read about.
Yeah, it's good, important reporting. We're glad to have you out there. Seamus Toomey, the editor-in-chief of Block Club Chicago. You can subscribe at blockclubchicago.org. Thanks so much for jumping on the phone, Seamus.
Hey, Matt, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
You bet. We'll talk to you again in 2019. He's got to get back to those kids now and keep them in line before he goes back to keeping all of his writers in line. BlockClubChicago.org. Matt Bubal in for John Williams here on 720 WGN. The John Williams News Click is rolling, though. Mark Carmen in WGN Radio Sports drops by to give his thoughts on it. So we talked about the Derrick Rose thing last night. Last night, Derrick Rose shooting free throws, crowds chanting MVP, 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 which was great, beautiful moment. Rose is smiling. It was a nice gesture. So the news click today is, that was a nice gesture, considering his Bulls career was disappointing. Or, love that. The Bulls should retire his number when he's done playing.
Well, for me, it's a no-brainer B, but I love it, retire it. Youngest?
Wait a minute. You are saying the Bulls should retire Derrick Rose's jersey?
He's the youngest MVP in the history of the NBA.
Right.
He's from your city. He's...
Carm.
Carm what?
It's great he won the MVP, but...
He won the MVP!
In 1 year, he won the MVP, yes.
Okay.
He also,
he was rookie
made the
of
comments.
The year as well. The Bulls... And let me ask you something, Matt. How many times have the Bulls made it to the Eastern Conference Finals since Michael left?
Just because your team is awful doesn't mean the best person from that awful team deserves accolades that remain forever.
Okay.
He got the MVP award. That's what he got.
So, but hold on.
You don't retire a jersey of a guy who did one thing and then said, I'm worried about the future when they wanted him to come back. Well, I want to make sure when I'm taking meetings, I'm not limping.
See, okay. He's not going to be in the Hall of Fame for how he communicates what's going on with himself. But all that stuff, it was just comments that were just throw them out. It doesn't matter. Yes, in theory, yeah, I do want to be able to walk around and play with my kids. So, by the way, he's also donating money off the court. He's got the Derrick Rose Scholarship.
And that's great, and that's wonderful. And that's why they should chant MVP and welcome him back with open arms. But is Dennis Rodman's number retired with the Bulls?
Dennis Rodman's a Piston.
Dennis Rodman did way more for the Bulls on the court than Derrick Rose ever did, right? Right?
No, absolutely not. No, come on.
With the three championships, he wasn't a really integral part of those last three?
Dennis Rodman was number three on that team. Derrick Rose was the face of those Bulls teams.
The face of a Bulls team that never did anything.
Dennis Rodman, first of all, Dennis Rodman should never have been here. Horace Grant should never have left. Second of all... Well, Dennis Rodman's not even.
But he was here, and he helped him win three championships.
But he threw Scottie Pippen into the basket support. That was like a deal with the devil to have him here. He's not a Bull. You want to retire? You want to argue Horace Grant with me? I would hear that better. You want to argue a Bill Cartwright? You want to
Steve Kerr?
No. Backup Derrick Rose with the MVP. He's from the West Side of Chicago. His story is incredible. And the fact that he got hurt.
So you're retiring a number based on that he's from your hometown versus what he really did on the court?
And he has accomplishments that's never been done before in the history of the NBA. 22 years old, winning the MVP, taking the team to the Eastern Conference Finals. His first playoff game against the Boston Celtics, I think he had 36-10 on the road in a series that went 7 with the ridiculous Joakim Noah.
So wait a minute. He had 36 points is now what you're putting. He scored 36 points in a row playoff game, and you're putting that as why his number should be retired.
He had a great career for his first 4.5 years before the NBA had a lockout. The season was condensed. His body was never correct. They did not use him properly. I don't want to put this all on Tom Thibodeau, but he does get a piece of this. And Derek for, I guess, not learning how to play with an injured body at that point in his career. But it's not his fault that he got hurt. By the way, I think they should...
I'm not going to say it's his fault that he got hurt. I'm just saying sometimes events transpire against you. I think that a jersey hanging in the rafters for all time should be... he's not going into the Hall of Fame, right?
No, he's not going to make the Hall of Fame. He actually has a chance to be a Bill Walton, who won an MVP and then became a sixth man of the year, which Rose is very much in the running for that this year with Minnesota. How about this? Would this bother you? How about he comes back next year? He's a free agent. The Bulls bring him back. 3-year deal for D. Rose at a reasonable rate. He has a nice, solid 3 years here. The Bulls get back to respectability.
Doesn't mean you retire his number.
What happens if he puts up what he's putting up right now? He's averaging nearly 20 a game.
Those aren't retire your numbers.
Whoa.
20 a game?
Hold on. Pull up Jerry Sloan's numbers. What were his numbers? The guy averaged like 17 a game. And what did that team ever do?
Well,
nothing.
Wait a minute. What was the league at the time? Don't tell me.
Fair enough.
40 years ago.
Fair enough.
17 a game.
Fair enough.
No 3-point line.
I'll give you another number they should retire over there. And they should have done it when he was alive. Norm Van Leer's number two should be hanging from the rafters there.
All right, then.
Maybe
then we talk about Derek after that.
Okay.
Playing Summertime? Because it's not feeling like it, or because it is feeling like it?
I was so hoping you would catch on to that, because it's not feeling like it.
It sort of is, though, Elif. I mean, think about it. It's December 27th? 28th?
Yeah.
And it's, Eric just said, it's 40-some degrees outside.
Well,
this is warmer than it should be right now. I mean, it's not going to be 75, but we could be walking in 4 feet of snow with, 20 below zero wind chills.
This is true. And
the glass half full.
This is true. Okay, that's why I played it.
Okay, excellent.
The other day, my mom goes, "Summer's coming." It just cracked me up.
We just had the winter solstice. The days are getting longer by a minute or so every day from now on till June. So things are looking up.
Well, January always sucks. Let's
January
face it.
Is a downer, isn't it? Why is that? Because everything good is out of the way. We had the new year, we had the holidays, and
that's
now
why.
It's just the trudge of everything.
Mm-hmm. People trying to fulfill their New Year's resolutions. That's exactly what the resolutions are.
312-981-7200. Bob had a comment on the Derrick Rose situation. Hey, Bob, how are you?
Hey, man, how are you?
Good, man.
Class of 74, SMC at the time.
Excellent.
Okay. The left and right field poll out in Wrigley Field.
Yes.
There's some numbers up there of some guys who never won a championship.
Sure.
Who, for the most part, played on a losing team, but were great ball players.
Billy Williams, Ernie Banks, Ron Santo, right? And Fergie Jenkins, right?
Fergie Jenkins.
Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, I saw Fergie over the Christmas holidays. But, those guys played on losing teams, but were great contributors, and so you got to give the guy his due.
listen, they were, and I'd have to look up all their stats, but those guys had long, storied careers with the Cubs. Ron Santo was like a 10-time All-Star. And all those things. And all of those guys had multiple, I think longevity plays a part in it, too, if you're retiring a number.
Agreed on that.
Kerry Wood, here's what we go by. If Derrick Rose has his number retired, Kerry Wood ought to have his number retired. Career was way too short, didn't fulfill like we wanted, never got the championship, but gave us some of the greatest memories that we had as Cub fans until 2016. The 20 strikeout game, rookie of the year, game 7 hitting the home run to tie the game up against the Marlins. Why isn't Kerry Wood's number retired then? Oh, there you go.
I think you'll probably see that, but at the same time, Derrick Rose, he's still playing, so, you know, not quite ready to retire the number, but I think he can retire the number after he's out of basketball.
I do not think we'll ever see Kerry Wood's number retired, and I don't think he deserves it. He just didn't have the career that deserves one of the all-time ultimate thank yous in sports, which is retiring a number. I don't think Kerry should have it. I don't think Derrick Rose should have it. But I do thank you for your call, Bob. I appreciate it. And he's right. A lot of Cubs, you know. But if the Cubs didn't retire numbers from players who never won a championship, then for 108 years, they wouldn't have been able to retire any numbers. So that's a tough one there. We're spoiled with the Bulls because we had those 6 incredible years. By the way, and I didn't get to mention this to Carm, but ESPN is teasing a Bulls documentary that is going to come out, I think not till 2020, but there's a teaser trailer that like somebody, some camera crew spent the entire last year of Michael Jordan's last year with the Bulls traveling with the team, and there's going to be some incredible documentary, but unfortunately it's like a year away. They already have a trailer out, which is the ultimate tease, but that is going to be really incredible to see when that happens. All right, last thing I want to get to before we get out of here today, Brian Noonan's getting ready to fill in for Roe at 3 o'clock. A good friend of ours from here at WGN, whose name is Beth, who I'm friends with on Facebook, posted something that just warmed my heart because I think as parents, we all have these moments where we're giving out the gifts at the holidays, whether it's for Hanukkah or Christmas or whatever you have, and you think you found this. Oh, they are going to love this. They're going to be so excited and so thrilled. And for us, as our kids get older, the holidays get harder and harder as far as wowing them with anything because they're getting older, and so they want things that are more expensive and they're more into electronics and whatever, and you don't have the like heartwarming thing anymore. So Beth wrote on her Facebook page, I would like to share this year's gift fail. So I thought it would be really cute to get my daughter an ironing board. We don't have one. She always gets mad about it and irons her clothes on the table. I was so excited to give her the ironing board that I saved it for last. I even told her to wait for 1 minute so I could clean up to be able to see how happy she would be or at least laugh about it. When she opened it, she cried for an hour, told me I made her think it was something amazing, and said she would never forget how awful of a gift the ironing board was. I think she's over it, but the gift is in the garage. I thought she said garbage at first, but the gift is in the garage. Have you, Elif, has there ever been a gift that for the holidays that you thought was going to be something incredible? And, you know, this goes back to the Christmas Story movie where they save the Red Ryder BB gun for the very last gift, and it's hidden in a corner, and then the kid gets the most amazing thing, and his eyes light up. This is the greatest thing ever. Have you ever, like, wanted something so bad or opened something thinking it was something else and then just been, like, so crushed and disappointed?
No. Only, and
but
I'm
you've
not,
never gotten an ironing board for the holidays either, right?
Right. I've received gifts that I wasn't super excited about, but I don't think my parents ever really pumped it up to be something awesome either. They said, all right, we got you what you wanted. Like, there were some years that I wanted there was one year that I wanted the guitar, what's that guitar?
Guitar Hero?
Yes. And now I don't even remember the name of the game. Yeah. And they got me that, and I kind of knew that it was in the box.
See, that's the problem. As the kids get older, somebody tweeted the other or put something on social media that her favorite Christmas memory is sitting with her sister on Christmas Eve, snuggled up on the couch, scrolling through her mom's Amazon purchase history.
Oh, my God.
So they're figuring out everything they're getting before.
That's lame.
And mom doesn't know. It's terrible, right? But I think kids are so savvy these days, and they're so well aware, and it's so hard to hide the gifts and to make them so special. There's just so much pressure on that for us as parents these days. I remember a couple of years ago, we were going to take the kids on a trip, and we didn't give them the gift. It was going to be like over a break, they thought I was going on a work trip. And so they had school. They were going to miss school that day, but they didn't know it. They thought I had an early flight. We had packed up all the bags the night before, had them in the back of the van, had the kids get up and get dressed. The pretend was they're going to drop me off at the airport and then go out to breakfast before they go to school that day. And on the way to them taking me to the airport, we gave them some envelopes to open up. And it was sort of like this puzzle that revealed we're all getting on the plane together and going to visit our friends in Texas. So that was our probably best surprise that we were ever able to do for our kids. 312-981-7200. Bill's on the line. Hey, Bill, how are you?
Yeah, the most disappointing I get one year, I was 12 years old. My brother, he was 11. And I was going away to school, and I got a set of luggage for Christmas, and he got an electric football game.
Well, you got a very practical gift that you needed, is what you got, Bill.
Yeah, right, right. I never let my mother forget that.
When you got luggage and he got, was it that old electric, game where the players
around
there?
The vibrating football game. Yes. Remember those things that vibrated and the men never went to which way you wanted them to go? You just put them on there and they vibrate around, stirring circles and everything else.
Absolutely. Those were the days back when that was the coolest thing going around. To imagine you were mad about that. Now if somebody got that for Christmas, they would, be so upset with their parents for getting the electronic football game.
Yeah, right, right, right. Okay.
All right, Bill. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it.
Okay.
312-981-7200. 630 writes, my brother-in-law made his son a He-Man fortress, put a lot of work into it, but my nephew was disappointed. He wanted the real one. Kids these days are tough to please. 312-981-7200. More next on 720 WGN. Texter from the 847 says, big difference between a retired number and a bobblehead night. D. Rose definitely deserves a bobblehead night. I think that's fair. 312-981-7200. Barbara's got a funny story about Christmas gifts. Hey, Barbara, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling in. What's your story?
Well, so it was the last day of Hanukkah. We had a bunch of people over, and I got my son a pack of white Nike socks. Okay. And I tossed him the bag, and he was so excited. 16-year-old boy. He was so excited. He gave me the biggest hug in front of everybody. And everyone's looking at me like, how could you be so excited about socks? And I said, well, because that's all he wanted. You're talking about a 16-year-old boy. What does he want? He wants his white Nike socks. And that was it.
I would expect him to want, something other than socks.
Yeah. Well, he did give me another hug because he did want some polo pajama bottoms because all the boys are wearing them. And I did cave in and buy them for him. So I got another hug for that. But that's all he wanted.
I have to admit, I really thought when you're making a big deal about him being 16 years old and wanting socks, that there was some weird way the story was going. But it was genuinely, he just wanted the socks.
He just wanted white, long, tall Nike socks. That was all. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't, what do they need? They don't, when they want something specific, you get them exactly what they want, and then they're happy.
Look at that. And how special, and he loved you for it. Good job. Well, thank you, Barbara. I appreciate
it. Of course, yeah. Mama got a hug. That's
good
all
job.
That matters.
That's all that counts in the end. Absolutely. Thank you very much, Barbara.
I think the way that the dad in A Christmas Story did it the right way was that he didn't make a big fuss about the gift.
Well, no matter what, that was what that kid wanted so desperately. That however he did it was going to turn out as a success. Our friend with the ironing board, she had said she really wants an ironing board, but that's not the type of thing that you are so excited to have, right? You want an iPhone or a trip or something you can't make the gift that's practical that, oh, we could really use that, oh, wait a minute, there's one more thing. When Oprah says, hey, wait a minute, everybody, they're expecting a car, not an ironing board, right?
That's something my mom would do, though. That's such a mom thing to do.
The ironing board?
Yeah, to see that your kid needs something.
And get them what they need.
Because you're hearing them when they complain about it.
Yeah.
And you're like, this is the year that I'm going to make their day, make their Christmas.
Well, I think it's a great gift. It just was timed wrong. It should, if it was one of the first things she opened, she'd be like, oh, that's awesome. We finally have an ironing board. But
right.
Then, the one
the
that I really wanted was, something later. 630 writes, I was disappointed in my high school graduation gift of a typewriter, which was a practical item for a college student. Years later, I learned my mom also wanted to go to college, but my dad said we couldn't afford to both go.
Oh.
How sad. Oh, that's terrible. 708 says, when I was way younger, I asked for a BB gun, and that was the only thing I asked for. And for the very last gift, they gave me a box that looked just like it. When I opened it, it was an electric weed whacker.
Awesome.
Terrible tease. Oh. Parents can be a rough lot, can't they?
My sister's the one in my family who gets really excited about presents, and she will order stuff, and she'll Like, as in, she'll make orders to me and my mom.
Like, tell you, this is what I want?
I mean, she doesn't require it. She won't be upset if we don't get it. But she is very specific. She knows the brand that she wants, a facial product or whatever it is.
Uh-huh.
And we go and get that. And she's ecstatic on the day of.
Sure. But see, it's interesting. For me, that's like, we have family members that do that, too, that, like, we buy this exact specific thing, and they pretty much know they're going to get it because that's what they asked for. And that takes to me, now listen, it makes the shopping a lot easier, but it takes all the joy out of it. Like, my favorite gifts are ones somebody didn't expect that was coming, that then they're very excited about. And to me, that's more like what Christmas should really be all about, is doing something great for somebody that they didn't see coming, versus this, here's exactly what I want. Okay, here it is. Why don't I just hand you the cash then and you go get it? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Or gift carding each other. We do a lot of that. But I'm always regretting it every year when we do it, because it's like, we should be finding them the special thing that they're really going to love and then they'll be excited about. And when we don't do that, when it's just, this is what I want, here it is, then it's all, I'm sad that we did it that way.
What? My sister, though, is a very good gift giver. So I know she's got a good eye and good taste.
Right.
She usually gets me clothing or a cute accessory or something. So I let her go crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And she's, I don't mind. I think it's a personal taste.
Would you rather, when you're shopping for somebody for the holidays, would you rather know exactly what they want and get them that, even if they're going to see that coming? Or would you rather figure out a way to find them something that they wouldn't have seen coming?
The latter.
You'd rather figure out a way?
Yeah. I'd rather figure out, takes more time on my own, what they need or want. Yeah.
And depending on how many people you have to shop for, that can get pretty onerous.
Yeah. What about you, though?
I want the best. I love the ease of certain things, but in the end, I'm always like, I wish we would have done this. I wish we would have taken the time and found this one special thing and done something, you know. But some people are, you know, especially older people in your life, I find are so hard to shop for. My mom and my aunt, my mother-in-law. It's very difficult to figure out what could we get, because you get to a place in life, and even myself as an adult, what do I really need? Socks are a good gift and things like that, quite honestly.
But
there's nothing that's going to, you know, so it's really hard. I think the key is, like, at some point during the year, to pay attention to somebody liking something and trying to figure out, they would really like this.
Exactly.
But then you got to try to remember that until it's time. All right, we're going to say hi to Brian Noonan here in a minute, find out what's coming up on the Rokan Show on 720 WGN. Coming up, the stories that matter with Kim Gordon from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. I'm Matt Bubala. I was here for John Williams today. Thanks for being with us, everybody. I'm back on the air in my usual shift, 1 to 5 a.m. Saturday morning. So on your late night Friday night ride home or early get up on Saturday morning, tune us in and hang out with us there. The news click for today. The crowd at yesterday's Timberwolves-Bulls game shouted MVP at Derrick Rose. Your two choices are A, love that, the Bulls should retire his number when he's done playing. Or B, that was a nice gesture, considering his Bulls career ended up ultimately being disappointing. What's your vote in that? So far online, the votes go. Let me refresh that. Or actually, let me turn to producer Elif there. Elif, can you give us the update on the John Williams news click?
I'm just pulling it up now. So hang on just 2 seconds. That was a nice gesture, considering his Bulls career was disappointing, 80%. Loved that. The Bulls should retire his number when he's done playing, 20%.
There you go. So 80% of people, despite Mark Carmen's pleas to say we should retire Derrick Rose's number when he's done, are saying no, that was a nice gesture. And that's about as far as it goes. Although Texter did suggest he does deserve at least a bobblehead night. So you got that. Coming up next, it is Brian Noonan in for Rokan. Is he there to say hello to us and tell us what's coming up on the show?
I am, Matt. Good to see you. Good to hear you. I would go with it's a nice gesture considering his Bulls career if I were going to vote in the news click, but I don't believe in voting in clicks. So
really?
No. I like to vote by myself. I don't give in to peer pressure. I don't go in with the click mentality, the mean girls kind of ostracization.
Ostracization?
I don't need it. I don't need to. I don't even need to know how to say it.
For the news click. You don't have to do that. You don't have to be part of this bandwagon if you don't want.
No,
Brian. I'm okay with that.
I just gave you my opinion. It was a nice gesture. I know Carm is. Oh man, Carm's all about Derrick Rose. I am on the other side of the spectrum on that. So it was nice that they chanted, gave him a warm welcome home. He played very well. Good for him. I don't wish him ill will. I just he's you know.
Yeah.
They're not going to retire his number. Please.
A texter suggested he needs a bobblehead night. I think that's a fair. That's fair. That's like a good compromise.
No. I think he's
done. He's going to get a bobblehead night?
No, he's been gone long enough. He's not. He's not going
to. MVP gets you a bobblehead night at some point.
It probably did back in the day. There was all sorts of stuff when he was the MVP. Now he's been gone for a long time. And, you know, if he was retiring as a Bull, then maybe if he comes back for a final season. But now he's just he was a local guy.
Yep.
Congratulations on coming here, being the youngest MVP, and then unfortunately things didn't go as planned for him, and so that's
Brian Noonan is taking names in the new year. It sounds like there is we're not going to be.
Let's be honest, Matt. I've had a list going for a long, long time. It's more like a scroll than a list at this point, but it's it's there.
Taking numbers and names in the new year. What's coming up on the show for the next 4 hours, sir?
Well, I'm going to be dictating that list for the first 2 hours.
Oh, it's going to sound like the old school closings then.
Yes, it's just going to be.
You'll just hand it off. You and Kim and Mark, you guys will take turns. Instead of saying, St. Ignatius is closed, St. Rita is closed, we'll say, and Brian is going to get back at these people in the next year.
My list of grievances and, either real or perceived for the first hour.
Sure.
No, we're going to talk to Ryan Burrow about some troubling statistics coming out of the police departments around the country. We'll talk to Tom Skilling. The Women's March Chicago Board President will join me at 4 to talk about some of the misinformation that has been coming out over the last couple days. We'll talk to an Irish comedian who's coming to Zany's, and then Executive Director of the National Mascot Hall of Fame, which opened yesterday in Whiting, will join us later. And Steve Dow will give us a report on elephants, the ones that he has been visiting.
That's right. He was in Thailand.
Yeah, he was in Thailand. I talked to him just before he left, and I know you and Steve communicate nonstop, working together on various projects. But he's going to come in and give us an update on that. And,
very cool.
Yeah, so a lot of stuff to get to over the next 4 hours.
Sounds like a busy day. I will listen all my slow drive home, sir.
Well, good luck. Be careful. And just so you know, to put your mind at ease, you have yet to be added to the list, Matt.
Oh,
so,
thank you, Brian. So I feel better.
Well, listen, it's take that little gem into the new year and do with it what you will.
I will.
Take care.
Have a good one, buddy.
You too. That's Matt Bubala.